Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, as always, joined by my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, as we break down Denmark on their quest for 2018 World Cup glory. Helping us do that tonight is our very special guest from the football expert for the 300 blog, Mr. Stefan Christensen, joining us tonight. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here. Stefan, I want to start off with you and get into your ties to Danish football. I know that if anyone has ever read the blog, you're really more connected to world football as much as you are Danish football. But give us your story behind Denmark.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I am born and raised in Denmark, and we have to go back to the 80s, the mid-80s, where Denmark qualified for the World Cup for the first time in 1986 in Mexico. And in 1985, when I was 6 years old, we played a famous game against the Soviet Union to qualify for the World Cup for the first time. And that game has been described as the greatest game in Danish football history. Denmark won the game 4-2. It was a crazy game. I rewatched it on YouTube recently, and the tempo is unlike anything you usually see in football from the 80s, even from the 90s. But I was 6 years old, and that was one of the probably the first game that I remember consciously deciding to watch. I had watched some games randomly and was hooked from very early on. And I remember it was on the Danish Constitution Day, so a national holiday. And I remember telling my mom, I have to go home to watch this game. And so we did. And this was an iconic team full of players from Europe's best clubs, and something that Denmark hasn't really had since. I can talk about some of the players. Michael Laudrup was he was only a teenager then, but already one of the biggest attacking talents in world football. Up front, we had the striker Preben Elkjær, who had won the Serie A title with Verona. Italy was already becoming the strongest league in the world at this point, and we had Morten Olsen, who was a fantastic defender, a libero back then, who would control play from deep. And Søren Lerby in midfield, who was a leader everywhere he played. He was famous for playing without shin pads, and had also won the European Cup with PSV Eindhoven, and also played for Bayern Munich. But it was a great team that captured Denmark's imagination. We had only had professional football from the late 70s. Before then, if a Danish player turned professional, he couldn't play for the national team. So that handicapped the team previously. But they had reached the semifinal for the 84 European Championship, which is before I can remember anything. But so they were a really good team, and football really boomed at that point in Denmark. And the team became iconic. They qualified for the World Cup for the first time. They won some famous victories before crashing out to Spain 5-1. But they had won some, I remember, certainly the game against Uruguay, where they won 6-1. Is really famous, and it's a team that, even though they didn't win anything, it has become very famous, and there are even books written in English about it. There's a book by Graham Smith, I believe his name is, Smite, called Danish Dynamite, The Story of Football's Greatest Cult Team, about the Denmark 80s team. And yeah, that was the first time they qualified for the World Cup. Later, it would be more up and down. And of course, in 92, they would win the European Championship with a totally different team. So yeah, that's the first World Cup, and the one that really made Denmark fall in love with their national football team.
So I'm just going to jump in real quick. Obviously, you know, a lot of people don't even know about this, but it's actually weird. You know, Denmark actually has a history in competitions and a really consistent one. If you look back, they were the surprise winners of 1992 Euros. Obviously, we're going to talk about the World Cup, but, you know, this is a country that's won more titles in the European Championship than England. But nevertheless, you know, they've had consistency, and I'm just going to go by real quick. As you mentioned, 86, first time, made it to a World Cup, finished in the round of 16. 1998, they returned, and obviously, with those players like Michael Laudrup and Peter Schmeichel in goal, you know, they went all the way to the quarterfinals, giving Brazil a really good game before crashing out. 2002, round of 16, only losing to England in that stage. Then they went back to... being their worst result. So fast forward now to 2018, Stefan. And obviously, you know, we see a rising generation of players that Denmark has had. I think with the exception with great players like Kasper Schmeichel, as we know what we've seen at Leicester, and Christian Eriksen at Spurs as well, and then Nicholas Bentler, among other players that the Danish side has. You know, what has been the vibe and the reaction of having reached the World Cup for the first time in 8 years?
It has been very positive. The previous coach, if I can go back a little, was Morten Olsen, who was a player on that before mentioned 80s team. And he has really been a big influence on Danish football for the last 30 years. And his team had some up and downs. You mentioned the 2002 World Cup where they lost to England. That was probably his best team. He was the first one to really bring possession football to a Danish national team. They had won the 92 European Championship, like you say, a huge upset and obviously the greatest moment in Danish football history. But after that, it was very defensive football. Obviously, the Laudrups, once Michael Laudrup came back, he famously didn't participate in 92. Periods with good football, but Morten Olsen was the one who really brought possession football to Danish football in the early 2000s, and many years that dominated. But people were, once they didn't qualify, some of it by luck, some of it by players who were aging and young players not quite coming through early enough. People were very frustrated, and once Morten Olsen retired, finally, some would say. I disagree. The new coach, Åge Hareide, a Norwegian, he wanted to change style completely, more direct play. And that was something that the majority of Danish football punters really longed for. They were sick of possession football and what they viewed as at the slow build-up that didn't really lead to anything. Denmark had a lot of trouble of breaking down defensive teams. So when Åge Hareide took over, there were a lot of optimism and a lot of change. But they started really badly in qualification. They started playing three at the back, and that worked horribly. They lost to Poland 2-3. And to Montenegro and Romania, and one at that point, no one thought they could really qualify. But through some changes, with some luck, and of course Christian Eriksen playing the best football of his life, they turned it around and really, to the surprise of everyone, managed to qualify by winning almost every game since the bad start. And yeah, people are really excited about it.
I was going to say, you know, I want to jump in about to talk about qualification here a little bit. Obviously, finishing second in Group E behind Poland, you just mentioned the magnificent run they went on to close out their group and make the playoff round. The only blemish really on their last five matches was a 1-1 draw to Romania in Copenhagen on the very last match day. But I believe at that point, things were pretty much all sealed and done, that they didn't have to worry about it. Impressive to me is the fact that they beat Poland on September 1st, 4-0 in Copenhagen. You know, during this run, the team that really was the highest scoring team in all of World Cup qualifying, Robert Lewandowski led all players with 16 goals. And here we are at the end, and you know, Denmark's beating them. So I guess my question to you, Stefan, is, you know, your impression going into Russia. Are we going to, do you feel that we're going to see the team that started so poorly and so slowly, or do you feel like we're going to see the team that won four of their last five matches, and then also the smashing of the Republic of Ireland 5-1 in the second leg to get into the World Cup?
Yeah, it will definitely be the team we've seen in the last part of the qualification. Whether they will be as good, I think personally will depend a lot on the opponent. I think Poland and Ireland specifically, they made huge mistakes against Denmark by playing too defensive. And at this point, Denmark had skipped the three-back line, which was really poorly put together with players that didn't suit playing three at the back at all. And there were a more physical presence up front. Denmark will be one of the probably the best team in the competition in the air. And they put a lot of physical pressure on. If opponents sit deep, Denmark can put a lot of pressure on you. And Eriksen has somehow thrived in this game, where you would think he would have had a lot of success under the previous regime, playing possession, build up, him being a playmaker. He has really thrived in this second ball game. He has so much anticipation and also, really underrated work rate. And he has really taken advantage of all the attention, I think, that opponents have given to the physical presence that Denmark can put up front. But I think if opponent play a higher line against them, and Denmark with the midfielders they have, they can't really keep the ball. So if opponents keep the ball, play a higher line, Denmark don't have much pace to really threaten in transition phases. So I think Ireland and Poland, even though Poland and Ireland, they're both really physical, strong teams, Denmark could kind of overwhelm them by playing, which you'll see no other team do, I think, up to 2 to 3 target men up front, at least 2 out of 3. Plus, they basically, the attacking fullbacks have been phased out in favor of more physical players. One of the midfielders, Thomas Delaney, is also really good in the air. Plus the 2 center backs, of course. So that can really provide a lot of problems for teams if they don't adjust correctly, I would say.
So obviously, Stefan, we got to go to the nitty gritty and talk about the group they're in. Obviously, this group C is probably one of the toughest ones at this World Cup. In order of Peru's, of Denmark's games, they take on Peru first on the 16th, followed by Australia on the 21st, before closing it out to France. You know, you mentioned you mentioned how Denmark is good in the air, and I think that's going to be very important against a team like Peru, who is also quick but also not really one of the tallest teams in this World Cup. Obviously, France is another story, you know, given the amount of amazing talent that they have to their display. So, yeah, my question to you, Stefan, is looking at this group real quick. First of all, what are your first impressions of this? And if you had to pick a game that you think is the hardest or the most important for this Danish side, which is it?
It's a really interesting group, I think. I think Peru is the most interesting opponent. I have watched some of their games, mostly against the big teams where they played very defensive and disciplined. I know that coach has a reputation to really being able to adjust to the opponent. They could provide that. I mean, that looks like a key game. France, I don't think France under Deschamps ever have played up to their potential, but still they have so much individual quality that they should come through. So yeah, the Peru game, where it looked like our coach Åge Hareide has gone all in trying to really maximize this aerial advantage, which is not really a great way of going to score. Scoring goals, you won't see the best attacking teams in the world scoring a lot of goals because of aerial ability. But somehow, this is where Christian Eriksen has stepped up, and he scored, I think, 10 goals in qualification in this kind of long ball, direct play environment. And Peru will have to really play well to resist that. I think especially one of the most underrated players, the left back, Miguel Trauco, who I think is one of maybe the best unknown left back, one of the best in the world. I watched him quite a bit, and I think he's fantastic. But he will play against either Cornelius or Yusuf Poulsen, who are really athletic and really tall, and they will try to basically pound long balls. And I would, I think it's really interesting how Trauco will face that challenge, and Peru in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, and Joe, I'll pose the same question to you. I mean, we've obviously seen how Peru play, given their amazing performance that they had in this World Cup qualifiers. We've seen how France can do, you know, despite maybe a bit of criticism of not being up to the expectations due to their manager. And obviously, we know what Australia could do as being that top team in Asia. You know, this is not an easy group for Denmark, for any of these four teams, nevertheless. But I just want your take on it. And also, do you agree with Stefan in that game against Peru, the first one being the most important one?
I absolutely 100% agree with that. I think Peru poses the toughest challenge to this Danish side. I think France is going to be a very difficult and tall task. So it would behoove Denmark to have secured at minimum 4 points and at maximum 6 points leading into that French matchup, because then you're really playing with house money at that point, and I think that would benefit the Danish side. It's going to be interesting to see how Denmark does handle the team speed of Peru. You know, we've done our Peruvian preview already. We've talked about Christian Cueva. We've talked about Paulo Guerrero as a strong number nine. So it'll be interesting to see how Denmark does handle that. But obviously, we've seen Denmark handle big number nines in the form of Robert Lewandowski, you know, arguably the best number nine in the world right now. And at the same time, when you look at guys like Christian Eriksen, Niklas Bentner, who I want to talk about in a minute, and Yusuf Poulsen and what he's doing at Leipzig, their ability to attack is going to really cause problems on the back line for Peru. But again, Peru also plays out of South America. They've dealt with incredible attackers, you know, Brazilian attackers, Colombian attackers, Argentinian attackers, Chilean attackers. They've dealt with very, very strong attacking sides in South America and have managed to qualify themselves for this World Cup despite having played those. So I think the most important match for Denmark here in this tournament is going to be this very first match, because it's really going to hold all the cards. I think Denmark in the second match is going to outmatch Australia. I don't see that going any other way. And then obviously the French match is two teams that would be reasonably familiar with each other, having all their players play in Europe. It is going to be a difficult matchup because the French team is arguably one of the favorites to win this World Cup. So you know you're dealing with a strong team there. This Peru match is really holding all the cards. And you know, I want to jump back to you, Stefan, because I want to start to look at the players to watch. And I want to start with Niklas Bentner. Obviously, you know, going back on my information here, Niklas, 30 years old, he is the most capped player of all the teams, of all the players that would be selected for this particular team. We mentioned Yusuf Poulsen, and the young 23-year-old striker at Leipzig has really done an incredible job there over the past couple of seasons. So how do we line up into this World Cup? Do we line up in some type of 4-4-2? Do we see Poulsen and Bentner playing together? Do we see another name that may actually play up top instead?
Bentner is interesting. He's always interesting. Mm. Maybe not as interesting as he thinks he is, but he's interesting. And yeah, he has managed to make a comeback. And I think people really want him to start, incredibly enough. Whenever Denmark play, when he's subbed in, he gets the biggest applause. They like his comeback story. But I don't think he's the best striker at all. Nicolai Jørgensen is probably first choice. He was top scorer in Holland last season. He's had a tougher time this time around. It will be more of a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3 one. But there will, a lot of the time, there will be three players up front. On the right wing, Yusuf Poulsen, he's a pretty unique player. He's really fast and he's excellent in the air, which is and he works really hard, which is a unique combination, you could say. But he has so many holes in his technique with his touches and his finishes that he's not really an individual threat, but he's a really good role player. And Denmark, they play, that's very important for the Denmark team. They play with a right-footed center back, Simon Kjær, the captain, and a left-footed one, Bjelland. And especially the left-footed one, he will be seeking out the right wing with long passes a lot. And that will either be Josef Poulsen or Cornelius, who's a reserve striker at Atalanta in Italy. And he's a real target man. I mean, he's really good in there. I mean, in these matches where there won't be a European ref and there won't be a South American ref, even something like, who gets the benefit of the doubt? Does the defender get the free kicks or do the attacker in these duels where you will have, especially against Peru, but even against France, Umtiti and Varane, if I want defenders defending the best players in the world, those are the two I choose. But if the Deschamps somehow doesn't play a high line, taking advantage of their pace advantages over the Danish players, they will also have some of these uncomfortable duel against all these Denmark players who are great in the air. So I think it will be Jørgensen in the middle, one of Cornelius or Poulsen at the right wing, but playing as a target man, so two target men, and then on the left wing, it will probably be more of a skill player, Pione Sisto, who can also do a lot individually and has some pace when he has the ball, on ball, but not really off ball. He's no threat off ball at all. He just stands on the wing, gets the ball, and then at will, basically, he can create either a shot for himself or a delivery from his right foot. It's really hard to stop, but not always effective. So that will be the front three for Denmark. And then Eriksen will have, he will be the most dangerous attacking player. He will roam around and have a lot of freedom and do the things he's best at.
Now, is there a player on this roster that's going to make the trip to Denmark that maybe we don't or not, are not familiar with yet that that may make a name for himself in this tournament?
Interestingly enough, some of the most talented players are left out. I mean, the most talented Danish attacker is Kasper Dolberg, who received a lot of hype last year at Ajax. He's had a bad season this time around. But I would still say, if he's healthy, he's the best striker Denmark have. But he's not really a target man like the others, and he probably won't even make the squad. And even the most talented Danish midfielders won't be in the squad. Nørgaard is, I mean, they won't be in the squad, so maybe I shouldn't even talk about them. But I think it's just to underline how much Harreide has built this team, not of the necessarily of the most talented players, but to really make a team that, yeah, that he thinks will be the most effective. But if I have to mention one, it would be Thomas Delaney, who's a box-to-box midfielder. He's great in the air for a midfielder. He has a good left foot. He works really hard. He's not that good in possession in central midfield areas, but he's good in his own box, and he's good around the opponent box, on ball. And off ball, he works really hard and provides some value defensively. He moved to Werder Bremen last season and immediately became the captain, which also speaks volumes about his personality, I think. And I think he could play for a lot of outside the top six Premier League teams. They would love a player like him. And then maybe, if he can stay healthy, our centre-back, left-footed centre-back, teams can always use a player like him, Andreas Bjelland. But he's just been too injured to be at a really good team. He plays for Brentford in the championship, but he has a good left foot, can handle himself physically, so he could play for a better team than Brentford, certainly.
Okay. Rob, I want to come to you with my last player question, and that is about goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel. Other than, you know, World Cup qualifying, really not challenged internationally at the country level. Obviously, at the club level, we know what he's done. He was part of that miracle team for Leicester City that won the EPL a couple years ago. He did make a nice run in the Champions League last year based on that title. But internationally, not really tested much other than World Cup qualifying. My question to you, Rob, is do you feel that Kasper Schmeichel has had enough experience, especially here at 30 years old, that that he's able to handle the pressure of the World Cup?
Absolutely. I think with all the experiences that he's had at Leicester City, I feel that's going to be good enough for him to head into his matches in the World Cup. And I think that goes for a lot of these players. I think a lot of these players would go into these World Cup inexperienced internationally, I think, with the exception of friendlies and your competitions that they play with their clubs, as well as, you know, other types of games. I think when you're going into a competition like a World Cup, you want to be mentally fit and you want to be mentally good. In that exception, I think with a player like Kasper Schmeichel, who's one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League, I feel that he would really be ready for this type of tournament. I mean, I feel that he is prepared to really help this this Danish side that you know is really good. I mean, they've conceded not a lot of goals as well, but I feel that they are ready for the challenge. And for Schmeichel, I think he is prepared, knowing the competition that he's already been facing and preparing for heading into this World Cup. I mean, yeah, Stefan, I'll pose the same question to you. I mean, do you feel the same, that Kasper Schmeichel is ready for this type of competition?
Yeah, I think he's absolutely. One of the strengths is his personality. I mean, he had to, for many years, play under the shadow, of course, of his father, who at one point was the best goalkeeper in the world. And without him, Denmark would not have won their biggest triumph, the European Championship in 1992. And he had some struggles early in his career. Manchester City had both him and Joe Hart in the squad, and they chose Joe Hart. So for a while, he played at lower levels before really making it big at Leicester, winning that incredible championship. Yeah, definitely. And he's a leader also. So once Denmark stopped playing that really poorly put together three at the back defense, they have been decent as long as they're protected by the midfield. But the midfield is set up to protect them rather than try to keep the ball. So I think that should... I mean, he's definitely not a weakness. He's a strength on this team, for sure. Yeah,
definitely. So now heading into predictions, obviously it's going to be hard to pick these 23 names. And obviously, Stefan, you mentioned names missing out, like Christensen, maybe Kasper Dolberg, Andreas Bertland. You know, there's a lot of names that could not make this team heading into this World Cup. But yeah, of course, I mean, you know, knowing the big competitiveness that this Danish club, Danish team has, heading into this World Cup, you know, what's a name that, you know, unfortunately, you feel that won't be making this World Cup team in Russia?
I mean, the biggest omissions are the midfield. Daniel Vaz is a versatile midfielder who's one of the best, who has been one of the best midfielders in Spain outside the big clubs for Celta Vigo. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg is incredibly talented. He now plays for Southampton. Nørgaard has been maybe the best midfielder in the Danish league, and someone like Mathias Jensen is the most talented midfielder we had in a while. I mean, they wouldn't it be worth mentioning if they weren't so clearly better than the midfielder who will be starting, William Quist, who's 33, and he's kind of a workhorse, very limited. But he's good in this second ball game that Denmark will try to turn games into. So I would say those midfielders are the most obvious omissions, because they're simply more talented than the one who will play. And of course, Dahlberg, who's a really talented striker, that he won't be there will also be strange, quite frankly.
No, definitely. I think he did very, very good for Ajax last season. And you know, for such a young talent at 20 years old, I could really feel that heading into this World Cup, it would have been a breakout tournament for him, and you would see him move to a bigger club in one of the top five leagues. So yeah, I understand 100%. And just my last question before I pass it over to Joe. I mean, you know, obviously we're familiar with a lot of names like Christian Eriksen, Thomas Delaney, Pione Sisto, Bentner, those type of players. But of course, you look into this Danish side, and they're really good on all levels. But I just want to ask you, you know, what's the one thing that for everyone, be it a Frenchman or Peruvian or Australian or anyone that wants to watch this Danish side heading into the World Cup, you know, what's the one thing to look out for And also, if you can, you know, can you give us a predicted starting 11 for heading into this World Cup?
I'll start with the starting 11. Harreide, the coach, has already said that he subscribed to this old school thinking that the players who got us there, they deserve to play. They deserve the opportunity at the World Cup. So at right back will be Dalsgaard. Simon Kjern Bjelland will be the central defender. Søren Stryer Larsen will be the left back. He's actually right-footed. He plays right back for Udinese normally. And here's one that plays from the most promising attacking left back that we have, Dumisi, who has been phased out. Then Delaney and Christ will be in central midfield. They played together for many years for FC Copenhagen and complement each other really well, even if they're not the most talented. Then Christian Eriksen will be in a free role, number 10 role. And yeah, he'll have a lot of freedom. He'll be the key player, the best player by far. Then I think Jussi Poulsen will be on the right wing, Nikolaj Jørgensen in attack, and Sisto on the left wing. That will be the starting 11. And again, the one thing to really look out for is how uniquely good this team is in the air. They have so many players who can put pressure on opponents simply in the air and with physicality. That's the one thing to look out for. And of course, if France and Peru will neutralize it by playing a higher line and by trying to keep the ball, then Denmark will be in a lot of trouble, because if we are put under pressure, no one can really play it out from the back. Then we'll be forced to, play long balls, but away from the opponent goal. If the opponents are deep, we can play the long balls around, in and around their box, and then Denmark will have a chance, even against France. But in a way, the Denmark team has been limited by not picking the best talent. But so opponents, they can also limit Denmark. But if they don't, and we can enforce our style of play, then they'll be really dangerous.
It's very interesting. Now, looking forward with the starting 11 and obviously the game plan in place, what would be a successful finish for this Denmark side at the 2018 World Cup?
Yeah, definitely going through the group. If we don't go through, a lot of the critics will surface. There's still people, myself partly, who think that we play too primitive. We haven't picked the best players. So maybe unfairly, with some result-oriented thinking, they'll be very criticized. But if they go through and meet a very strong opponent in the knockout stages, then it will be a success, I think.
And it's going to be difficult no matter where they finish, if they do finish first or second in the group, because awaiting them on Group D is going to be either Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, or Nigeria. You know, two of those four teams are going to make it out of that group no matter what, and all of them pose enormous challenges to any team coming out of Group C, that's for sure. My last question of the night is, you know, with a team that has won one European championship but was absent from this tournament 4 years ago, what would a World Cup trophy mean to the people and the players of Denmark?
Oh, I mean, it will be... Yeah, it will be amazing. It's so hard to even imagine, because even though at the time the European Championship in 1992 was seen by a miracle and still is seen by a miracle by many, it was still only 8 teams. And if you have any kind of, I don't know, poker background or gambling background, you know there's a lot of luck and variance. So maybe it wasn't so amazing after all. There were many amazing performances. And it was an incredible triumph, but yeah, the World Cup, it's very unrealistic. But of course, it will be back then. Millions of people were out on the street. The whole country will come together, and yeah, it would change the country in so many ways, probably politically, culturally, socially, you name it. It would be amazing, but it won't happen.
You know, I've got to say, it's been a standard question that we've asked on all of these shows, and the answers have been very, very similar no matter what. And for me, I'm starting to get the anticipation. I can't wait to see the scenes from the country when that particular team wins that World Cup, because those are kind of the sports celebrations that you always dream of. Hopefully they don't turn violent, but it would be something magical to witness. So, Stefan, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. And, Rob, I want to thank you as well for coming on the show and breaking down Denmark. Again, this is Joe Uccello, your host for This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.